Okay, so we'll get started. This is session 227. Thank you for coming. It is titled, Is Your Thread Weaving a Cable, a Quilt, or Chaos? The session is being recorded and audio will be available for purchase at the Sunstone Audio Desk after the session. About this session, more and more Mormons are deciding to jump off the obedience train and explore a new faith journey. The initial freedom is one that feels intoxicating, but this new journey introduces many choices that can become very confusing. This session offers techniques for making those choices in a way that can minimize regret and introduce more joy and peace into one's individual faith journey. Russ Osman, our today's speaker, has a PhD from Syracuse University. He has spent 23 years as an LDS chaplain in the U.S. Air Force and held positions at major metropolitan banks in New York and Georgia. He is now a consultant with senior executives at Fortune 500 companies and lives near Atlanta, Georgia. Russ, thank you.
Thank you. I once wrote a biography, and the first sentence was, I hate gravity. And so I'm going to walk around. Sorry, I hate gravity. And those of you on the back row, by sitting back there, you miss the goodies on the chairs up here. It's called seduction. And you're more than welcome to come up, and I won't bite you. But you won't get anything if you don't come up here. So that's your choice. You just, no, you're supposed to have two. All right, now. My little doodah thing in my hand, the clock is going to go off in about 8 minute increments. Because we have three chunks of things I'm going to go over. Two of them involve exercises that involve you answering some questions about the kind of rope you have woven and when you can predict it's going to fray or break. And, oh, did I mention a very easy thing to do about it that might bring you a little peace? How many of you got this sunstone in your packet? My article in there is an introduction to the last half of what I'm going to say, so I'm going to say it more quickly because you can read it. Black cover, white t-shirt, no. Hang on. Fall of 15. You can have this one. Okay? Yeah. There you go. Now, when I became a chaplain, I discovered two things. Number one, I had to wear a cross on my shirt. I was raised in Star Valley, Wyoming. When you still couldn't get out of the valley in the winter because it was snowed in. I am an Osmond. They're my cousins. Our great-grandfather was the first state president there. I was raised in what today is called a TBM home for the insane. I go on a mission I wasn't supposed to. I went back east to a really liberal university, the most liberal in the country. And then I had one of those experiences and decided to go on a mission. Walked into my bishop's office, he didn't believe it. Come home, get married. 5 months, 27 days. I was on schedule. Back in those days, you had a 6 month clock. Is that better? And 2 years later, this only child that had been raised by rebellious parents, my mother is the most incredibly rebellious woman you'll ever meet. She's been in the ground now for about 30 years. My father had a horrific handicap and so never would let himself be seen in public. They claimed they adopted me. And then I put a cross on my shirt. Now, you know, the cross is a symbol of the devil. You know that in the 1950s. And the priests are priestcraft and the church of the devil. And you know that. I mean, you read that McConkie dude, right? But I had to minister to everybody. What the flip is ministry? Home teaching? That's a timely question this year. Now, why am I giving you this introduction? Because I want you to notice what you are feeling. This isn't about me. And I want you to notice what your reaction was when you walked in the room and spread out like you were in a Protestant church and saw the paraphernalia up there and saw the over there. And I think the word for that is chaos. You had a response of some sort. So in Protestant chaplain tradition, I am going to open my sermon with a story. And since I was in the Air Force, it's an Air Force story about an Air Force Academy graduate. Now, you may not know, we're talking about how you weave your rope. Isn't that what this is about? Well, listen closely. You may not know that traditionally, at least through the year 2000, when people graduated from the Air Force Academy, they'd saved their money that they were paid for the 4 years to buy a Corvette. And the largest single delivery date for Corvettes in the country every year is graduation day at the Air Force Academy. And then they go off in their Corvettes, particularly the ones that are going to go to pilot school. Big deal. Well, one of these pilots went to Valdosta, Georgia. He was a cocky kid from New England. They stationed him at a training base in Valdosta, Georgia. That's on the coast. You may have heard of Brunswick Stew. Brunswick Stew is down near there. You may have heard of Camp Lejeune, North Carolina. It's farther north because it smells bad. That's a southern joke. Didn't work. And he's just full of himself. I'm going to be a general someday. And he meets a townie. Anybody here know what a townie is? That's a woman in the town adjacent to the Air Force base. And he informs the townie he's going to marry her. And she says to him, well, you can't. We're in the South. You need my father's permission. Oh, okay. Well, set up a date. I'll come over for dinner and we'll do it. She liked him. And so she said, okay. So he gets ready for that, polishes his car, puts on his uniform. He's a picture of America, looks like a Marine, the way the Marines look now, all spiffy and everything. And he goes to the local drugstore in Valdosta, which was a small town then. It's a true story. And he walks in and says, I need to speak to the druggist. Okay. And so they take him to the back, to the pharmacist. And he says, how can I help you, young man? He says, do you have any boxes of chocolates? And the druggist is kind of bemused, and he looks at him and says, yeah, I have a $3 box, a $5 box, and a $10 box. What would you like? He said, I'd like all three. And the druggist thought that was a little odd, and so he said, why? He said, well, tomorrow I'm going to meet the parents of a woman that's going to marry me. I need her father's permission. They haven't met me, but he'll say yes. Because I'm going to be a general. I'll give him the $3 box of candy. And at the end of this spectacular meal that her mother's going to make for us, she'll be all excited about her new potential son-in-law. I'll give her the $5 box of candy. And then I'll drive off into the sunset with that lovely girl in my Corvette and give her the $10 box of candy. Druggist wisely looked at him and said, well, you certainly are prepared. Yes, sir. I'm a second lieutenant in the Air Force. I'm going to be a general. And he walks out. Next day he shows up, absolutely dressed to the T. Walks in. It's a little awkward, but it's always awkward in the South when you meet a girl's parents. Oh, and by the way, they didn't like the folks next to the Air Force bases in the South don't like the officers. It's kind of a rule of thumb, mostly because they're Yankees. That's real. I'm a damn Yankee, just for what it's worth. Because I came to the South, didn't go home. Now, they sit down to eat. The there she is with her family, brothers and sisters. And her father turns to him and says, "Would you say grace?" He says, "Yes, sir." He bows his head and he starts to pray. And he prays and he prays and he prays. And he prays and he prays and he prays. Potatoes get cold, kids get fidgety, he keeps praying. Finally, he says, "Amen." Mary turns to him and says, "John, I didn't know you were so religious." And for the first time since he graduated from the academy, he was humble. And sheepishly, he says to her, "I didn't know your father was the druggist." Now, I took about 10% of the time in this session to tell you that joke. But before I told you the joke, I ask you to notice what you were experiencing in the room. There are three things I'm going to talk about. The first is the rope and the thread. The second is what triggers you. And the third is an iceberg. So on that note, let me talk about a thread. I have here somewhere. This is a hemp rope, not a pot rope, a hemp rope. Many of you in the West will recognize this. It is a rope made out of strands. In Afton, Wyoming, when I was a little boy, I was sitting in a primary class. The teacher comes in, and she gives all of us a piece of thread, a little longer than this, but about that big. And she says to these little boys, "Can you break it?" Of course we could. Then she gave us two of the same size. "Can you break that?" "Yes." Then three, then four, then five. Then some of us dropped out because we're wimps. And finally the bullies dropped out after 10 of them. She says to the teacher, "Why couldn't you break it?" And the little boy says, "Because there's too many." And then she said, "That's right." And she held up a frayed piece of hemp rope like this. And she said, "Come over here. See, all this is made up of is lots of little threads wound together. And then that's wound to this, and then that's wound to this, and so on until it gets bigger and bigger and really hard to move. Every choice you make will add a little thread to the rope of life that by the time you're my age," she said, "will pull you irresistibly in the direction that you have chosen. And if you don't think about it, you'll end up being pulled someplace you don't want to be pulled." That was almost 70 years ago. Yeah, I'm old. She's right. Each of you sitting here has woven a rope by your choices. How you feel about that rope and whether you had control over it or not in your perception is what we're going to talk about. Opening concept of the title of this hour is what are you weaving? Or what have you woven? And what would you like to weave into what you've woven to end up where you want to be? Because I'm led to believe by my friend Dan, who I listen to regularly on his puddlecasts, what are those called? Popcorn casts, whatever those things are. And I listen closely to the amount of time people talk about feeling betrayed, deceived, hurt, abandoned, looking for direction. It was called a faith crisis when I first met Dan, and then it started to get called a faith transition. Now I'm hearing it called a faith journey. I live out on the East Coast. I don't know if I got them in the right order. That's just what I hear. It's very real. Here's why it happens. Don't forget the rope. don't forget the rope. It happens because all of us are two people. Now, I think you're Craig Stapley, right? Is that you? Are you Craig Stapley? Darn. I just lost my example. You sure look like him, or you're at least as studly as he is. I'm just a dumpy old man. But the point is, Craig yesterday was talking about his illustration for the church, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Brilliant presentation in which he suddenly discovered there was more going on than he thought or wanted and had to make a hard decision. Oh, interesting. What he didn't say, not because he's not brilliant, but because it's not commonly said out loud, is that he's two people. Dan is two people. I'm two people. I think your name is Susan. Did I meet you yesterday? Oh, you're one of the moderator people. You're five people. No, you're two people. No, we're going to go back to two. We'll start with two. And the non-Craig Stapley back there is two people, too. Now, what are the two people? I'd like you to visualize an iceberg. People can do that. People know that an iceberg is 10% above the water you can see and 90% below that you can't. Everybody knows that. What killed the Titanic? The part above the water or the part below? Below. They didn't see underneath the water. Well, here's the two people we all are. Shrink time. Brace yourself. Oh, by the way, I'm also a clinical psychologist. And went to school way too long. But my PhD is in terrorism. And what makes a person a terrorist. And the model I designed in the 1970s still works. The part of you, we'll call it person one, that people see, converse with, talk with, that has a vocabulary, an interaction, a physical presence, is the part of you that's above the waterline of the iceberg. But the part of you that reacts is learned behavior below the waterline of the iceberg. That's often today called motivation. Now, this is pretty interesting. I now have data. I'm one of those psychometric guys, too. Okay. I've got data now on about, 13,000-14,000 people. All ages, all cultures, all over the world. I have a particular concentration during about 4 years in the Wasatch Front, and the patterns are incredibly consistent. The way people's head works, which I'll call 1, 2, 3, 4 for the sake of discussion, in 80% of the cases contradicts the way their gut works. I'll use the same numbers, 1, 2, 3, 4. My head is a 1-2 head in my model. That's really interesting. But most people think I am a 3. Put me under pressure, surprise me, put me in a room where things don't make sense, put me in a room with a crazy guy who doesn't even have a PowerPoint and wears a t-shirt. Yesterday says never forget and has a videotape on it and a floppy drive. I don't know if anybody saw that. And then gives you fortune cookies. It's kind of weird. You're here, thanks. Maybe you just want to sleep. Well, the part of me under the iceberg absolutely contradicts the way I talk. And I didn't know that until I was in my 40s. Now, if you'd be kind enough, there's my business card is sitting next to you someplace. On the back of it, on the left-hand side, it shows you, it's kind of hard to see, but you see four colors, and I think you see the words in there, why, what, how, who. You might be able to see them. They're kind of hard to read. Now, put the card back down. That's the top of your head, the top of your iceberg. Now, I'm going to ask Dan's help to give each one of you a piece of paper. I will help him. And when you get this paper, do not write on it. Just try to make sense out of it, please.
by the same eight people.
People. Motivators, sorry. We're all motivated by the same eight. Trouble is, we differ from each other in terms of how we grew up. There was a speaker in the 50s who was very popular because he began to swear in public. University professor. He made a lot of money. His talk was, what you are is what you were when you were 10. And he would just trace birth dates by decades and then describe a person that was standing there by the year of their birth. It was a very clever showman thing. What he didn't know is how true it was. I was born here, stolen out the back door of a hospital. That was the story I was told. Adopted eventually, moved to Star Valley. Age 13, I go to Virginia, just outside of D.C., and I'm the only white in all black junior high school. I had never seen a black. Life experience. All of those experiences I had before I was 13. Being adopted in a polygamous community where you're a second-class citizen because nobody wanted you, they threw you away. I couldn't read well. I'm not a jock. I'm not a farmer. Flunk shop. Anybody see anybody flunk shop? I flunk shop. You don't do that in Star Valley. Then I'm out in this all-black school. Yeah, that was terrifying. My rope was woven very large and very tight by the time I was 13, the rope under the water. What I'm afraid of, what I react to. Here's what I'd like you to do. It is now 10:38. My understanding is we go to 11:15, right? Okay. I'd like to take 5 minutes and read the document I gave you by row. Notice what the columns say. The columns say the same thing. They just identify in the first column what a person with that motivator prefers. Call it motivator 101. Don't worry about the name of the motivator. It's just what a person with that motivator prefers. What they don't like, may avoid. What they kind of want. And then what they're going to worry about. I just want you to read through. This is yours. You can keep it. But try to circle or in some way identify one, if not two or three, of these lines that make sense to you. None of them are unhealthy. I will share it with no one. This is yours, okay? I'm not trying to sell anything. I just want to see how the model works. Okay, you got 5 minutes, please. All those bottles over there and cups? Some of you did, didn't you? Is that small? Oh, I like you. The mayor of New York City outlawed cups this size. I was in New York the week next. I found a 7-Eleven and got the big gulp that has 57 ounces. I'm extreme. I'm not too orderly. Okay, time's up. Here's what I want you to do. Anybody with the courage, and I'm not going to complain if you don't raise your hand, but anybody that's willing to share the line or one of the lines that they find interesting and applying to them. Just say, okay, the non-Craig Stapley, what's your name, sir? Jared? Oh, man, do you sell diamonds? Okay, which line? One, two, three. Just you read the first word other probably prefers. Really? Well, Daniel, would you be kind enough to give Jared two of these? Two of those. All righty, anybody else? Yes, ma'am, what's your name?
Michelle.
That's a great name. What line did you prefer? What are the words? Oh, no kidding. Oh, no kidding. Oh, we're going to have a lot of fun here. Okay? Anybody else have any courage to be embarrassed? Yes, sir? I could tell that by looking at you. I mean, your hat's clean. Okay, now, better give him, I'd give him two yellow ones. I'd almost give him three, but I'd give him two. Anybody else? I know you. I'll remember it. I saw you last night. You remember my name. This is terrible. I was getting there. what line? Oh, really? Well, give him one blue one. What's your second line? Yeah. Oh, shucks. Okay. Yes, but. Yeah, I got to. Yes, but. Very blue thing you're doing. Give him another blue one. Yeah, give him another one. Anybody else got a little? What's your name?
Maria.
Oh, darn, I just met a girl named Maria. I'm an Osmond. Am I supposed to sing? What lane did you pick?
I'm sorry to say, but it's Beauty and Appearance.
I'm really shocked. Now, is it the one with Beauty and Appearance and Fairness, or are you giving me two, the one with Approval? Okay, good. Give her a yellow one. Give it two yellow ones. Okay? Now, let me tell you what I'm doing. Every one of these, we all have. We learn them as children when we find ourselves in circumstances that in some way make us feel uncomfortable, and we choose to respond in a way that restores a sense of stability or safety. Nothing wrong with it. It's not sick. It's just how we survive. Now, there are names for these. You'll notice there's circles on the bottom of the page. I got a nice colored business card there. The same one you have on your chair, but you don't have the back side on this sheet. I'll use the back side and the front side. Now, here's the deal. No, I'm talking about the business card at the back side. Now, is there anyone here that just picked the first line? Just raise your hand. There's usually one or two, okay? And we've already gotten some second liners, okay? Anybody pick the third line? Mormon audience. Anybody pick the fourth? Notice how rapidly they want to get noticed. That was a joke. You can smile. I met you last night. I'm not going to hurt you. Okay, anybody pick the fifth line? Oh, yeah, you would. Anybody pick the sixth line? Up high. Higher. Notice the traffic jam. Did you get that? A lot of you guys on the sixth line. Got that? Anybody get the seventh line? Yes, you did, and so did you. No, you got the seventh. You got the seventh line, right? That's fine. And did you get the seventh or the eighth, sir? That's what I thought. You're supposed to raise your hand. It's, you know, it requires counting. I understand. We're both old. Do we have an excuse? I know. Oh, hi there, eighth line lady. How you doing? You're not alone. Who else picked the eighth line? Look around. They're mostly usually female, and quite attractive females, by the way. Now, let me tell you where this comes from, and then let me tell you what your rope looks like. Here are the names. Go down to the little blue. Turn the business card over, if you would. On the right side of the top, it has the letters in the circles. You see that? And then it has a word next to each one. What is the first blue letter? A. That is analysis. My friend Patrick got one blue. Did you not, Patrick? And then did I not up it and give you a second one? Or at least make a joke about you? The probability of him having a fairly analytical reaction when confronted with surprise, is probably higher than a lot of people. It's not good or bad, but you have a tendency to want to ask questions. Probably be kind of independent too, but ask questions. And they never stop. How's that do? Nothing. That happens. Okay, now the second one letter is what? D for dominance. Oh, a couple of you have that one, don't you? Raise your hand if you've got that one. Oh, I love it that you have it, ma'am. I love it. How many grandkids do you have? How many great-grandkids? Who's in charge? That's right. Who else had the D? Oh, yeah. Not going to ask you any questions because you're in charge. You like being in charge and organizing. And for Pete's sake, give me money for what I do. It's worth it. It's called dominance. I hate that word. The word sounds horrible, but actually it's incredibly important to the balance of a society. People with this motivator in their top two or three have a need to take control, organize, clarify, and move faster. It's just there. Society needs it. Nothing wrong with it. You have the mix of the other seven. You follow me? Okay, what's the next color down on that side? Green, right? What's the first letter? What's the word? Structure? How many of you have that line of interest? Look around. One, two. You picked it as one of the ones that was important to you. Well, two or three. You would not be in this audience if structure was on the top, because that means obedience. There's three or four of you that know how to think. You're here to ask questions, think, figure things out, because of the mix of motivators. You follow me? And the three or four of you that raised your hands, like checklists, you're a little frustrated by my lack of a handout and quite annoyed by the way I'm using time and making too much noise. And for Pete's sake, you haven't made any sense yet. That's kind of what happens. Would somebody respond? Now, who has a P? Anybody have a P? I don't think Sunstoners would have P's. You have a P? Well, that's good enough. That's close enough. Red hair. Yeah, you probably do because of what you said. P means practicality. I want to see it, kick it, count it, skin it, eat it, get paid for it, and move on in 37 seconds. Very tangible. It's the engineer. It's the builder. It's the person that must be busy all the time. Not a whole lot of people at Sunstone come to Sunstone to be busy all the time, except an organist does. I mean, you know. Go ahead. These do track by profession, and that makes sense. And thank you for your comment, because it illustrates that once you begin to see patterns here, they make sense. All right, that's structure and practicality. Now, what's the first red one down on the bottom there? T, right? Did you say T? That stands for, I love this word, it never flies on the Wasatch Front, transcendence. How about spirituality? Does that fly a little better? How about just old-time religion? Transcendent. Oh, that's better. Yeah, that's right. Very edumacated, yeah, transcendent. When I did this for the entire legal division of the Coca-Cola system worldwide, the labor laws in Europe do not allow you to ask people these questions. And Italy went ballistic because it's a Catholic country, and they didn't want to admit it. The lawyers didn't want to admit it. It's really funny. So they forced me to change the word from spiritual to transcendent. Same content. How many of you raised your hand that transcendence was the line you picked? Did you notice we didn't have a traffic jam? Except for Dinglefutz over here, who's wearing a red shirt. That's a nice guy. That's why he does what he does. He is driven to build community inclusively. That's what transcendence motivator does. It's not necessarily the testimony we're used to in Mormonism. It's a desire to make sure others succeed in a way they never thought possible. It's kind of important. Now, what's that H? Humanitarian. See that? How many of you had H somewhere up there that was pretty interesting? Remember we had a whole lot of hands go up? Raise your hand again, please, if you had H. See that? I made a comment about that, right? In the Mormon data set, which is probably about 3,000, the full length of the valley, although most of these folks were millennials, the H was dominant every time. It's humanitarian. It's caring. It's sharing. It's Mother Teresa. It's rescuing. Is that a word we've heard in the last few years? Somewhere from someplace down at 47 East somewhere? Rescuing. Or I know more about what you need than you do. I'll fix you. Anybody had that experience? That's endemic. Okay, go to the next. The first yellow one is what? I. Hello, friend. You have an eye, don't you? What does that mean? Self-reliance. There's two ways that'll show up, my way or the highway, or just leave me alone. I'll work with you, but don't make me go to a meeting. Very rare. Unless you are close to the land or you're building something that's never been built before. People with a strong independence motivator, that's who they are. They're kind of unusual. It's the lowest percentage of the population. Do you work in a rural setting at all? Bingo. Are you a good one? Is this your brother? Did he pay you for this? Oh, okay. No, but makes a point. Last one is a setting. Hello, Maria. Ah, that's very important. It's gotten much more important since Title IX, which was when they forced the universities to allocate the same amount of money for athletics for women as for men. And the aesthetic motivator has gone off the track, off the charts with women, and has the independence motivator. Now, if that little white thing I gave you, and some of you, there are at least 20 of you that got that little piece of cord, if you look at it on the end, you'll see it's frayed. Very small little threads, but it's frayed. You follow me? All you got to do is go to Lowe's and cut off their twine they wrap with. But notice, it has a lot more strings in it. Well, whatever your dominant motivator pattern is what is pulling you. And it pulls you when it is triggered. When you are surprised, uncomfortable, think something is out of order, think something is stupid, crazy, wrong, and that's instantaneous. Now, Susan, I'm going to ask you to participate a little because of what you said yesterday. So you can say no now or forever keep your peace. You made a comment yesterday that when you got involved in ATF, you were all in like bam, right? So look at that. No, it wasn't your intent, but it happened. Oh, it happened to you. You had nothing to do with it. It just happened to you, yeah. I promise you that if you'll study this chart, you'll be able to identify the motivators that ATF satisfied that were not satisfied before that. That gives you a way of recognizing what brings you joy instead of chaos. Does that make sense? It was a pretty dramatic example that you gave yesterday. Now, folks, if I had done what I originally meant to do, and that was bring four colors of thread. I brought four colors of rubber bands, but it's really hard to find green rubber bands, so I don't have enough. But we have this. Now, Dan's going to walk around, and he's going to offer to you some, what are those things called, the hair things girls use, whatever? And, he's going to offer to you as many of those as you want in whatever color you think aligns with whatever lines you picked. And while I'm talking, I'd just like you to take them, and then I'll show you what we're going to do with them. But the point I want to make now is far more important than being entertaining. All this stuff up here, by the way, is backup information for this and scientific data and ways to get more definitions. Let me show you. What time is it? Okay. This is the document I gave you. This is the text. It has it lined up with the actual motivators. You feel free to come up here and look at this. If you want a copy of any of this, just send me an email at the email on the card. These things cost a lot of money, but I have them in email form and can send them to you. You follow me? Now, I mean, that's a please. Okay, it's a please. Now, while Dan is doing what he's doing, let me show you something. Oh, by the way, which of those motivators do you think drive me the most? Am I humanitarian? Am I independent? Am I practical? Do I love structure? Am I really turned on by aesthetics? What did you say, sir? You think I like structure? We have a vote for structure and an assumption about military where I spent 22 years of my life. Yes, sir. And I was just recognized with a thank you for coming home for serving in Vietnam just last month. I came home a long time ago. They didn't say thank you then. Governor of Georgia did something. Election year, you know. Yes, sir. Well, that's a truly scientific answer that's technically correct. So I thank you for it because everybody's thinking it. No, I'm not criticizing. But what will happen is the more surprising the situation, the more two or three conflate and form a pattern. That's the point I'm trying to make. And we can actually, you can complete an assessment that'll actually rank order them for you, okay? But based on this short period of time, just any other guesses? Patrick, what do you think? Oh. He doesn't pay attention a lot, does he? He does that a lot, doesn't he? He just sort of wanders out. Yeah. How about you, ma'am? Yeah. That's independence, isn't it? I have asked this question about this point in a presentation like this every time I've made it for the last 35 years. Not one audience figured it out. You cannot guess, regardless of the level of information you have. I often spend 3 hours before we get to this point going over detail of profiles. Nobody can guess anybody else's motivation or triggers. You cannot guess the other person's triggers. You have no idea what will make them feel betrayed, deceived, lied to, avoided, discounted, hurt. Not one in 30, what did I say, five? It's probably seven now, years. Interesting. You can't guess somebody else's. My dominant motivator is transcendence. I am a blankety-blank holy Joe out the kazoo. You got to put TBM in neon lights when you describe me. That's your problem. No. I know I don't. That makes my point. What drives me is a desire to help people discover who they really are as children of God. But I can't say that in a corporate setting. But I have two other very high-scoring motivators. One happens to be analysis. I have 8 degrees, advanced degrees. In my family, my 3 children have 13 advanced degrees. We are like eggheads, okay? I'm very analytical. I ran 2 major banks with no banking experience, and they're both still there. And I was a CFO and had never seen a balance sheet. But I can analyze. You wouldn't know that until you get me in a conversation about Mormonism. My wife once said to me, "Darn, you can give every anti-Mormon argument in the world. Why don't you leave the church like I did? You know all the answers." And I said, "Yeah, there's a piece missing." Ah, it's the spirit, but this isn't a preachy thing. My other motivator is dominance. Hi. Who else had dominance besides this lovely lady? Somebody over here. There we are, right there. Now, look at that color chart on the card or the bottom of the sheet. You can sense another person's motivators. You will guess them wrong, but you can sense them. Let me explain something. If another person with a yellow motivator structure is with you in a class or a meeting, you'll kind of resonate with them. If you have yellow motivators near the top, or blue to blue, green to green, red to red, okay? That's why a lot of people like being around people that like to tell stories and cry a lot. Those are red motivated people. Nothing wrong with it. Blue-motivated people want to have all these arguments about, was Brigham Young aware of Mountain Meadows? And that's been going on for, what, 150 years? They're never going to solve that, and they're going to keep arguing about it. That's a blue, and if I got a bunch of other blues, I have a blast. Green people just want to kill things, get it over with, and go on and have something else. Those are bishops, sorry. According to the checklist they have, having been a bishop, I know the checklist. Oh, what about these yellow-motivated people? Oh, they just want to talk about, you know, let's kind of meditate and let's make sure we give some time to be kind of Buddhist and not rush anything. And don't put me in a box. Give me some time to process. Nobody said that yesterday, did they, Susan? That's what ATF does for you. It helps you meet all these different kind of people. And here's what I'm building up to. I'm still at the bottom of the iceberg. Have I made that point? Have I made that point? Okay. Now, here's really important. I happen to be very blue motivated, very dominance and analysis motivated. I'm also transcendently motivated, which means I'm psychotic because I'm at cross quadrants. If you're motivated like the people you're with, you're comfortable. If you're on the cross of the circle, like this, if it's a blue-red difference between you and somebody else, it's instant distrust. Half of you, or at least a quarter of you, didn't trust me after 10 minutes. About six people walked out. Happens every time. That's because I'm not functioning the way they hoped I would. It's fine. It's not their fault. Not mine. It's reality. Okay? The blue-red will distrust. But by talking with each other, they can build bridges. Does that sound like a shrink? I are one. Okay? But if you get a yellow dominant motivated person, remember they're rare. What's your first name, sir?
Lane.
Hello, Lane. We're in the same lane. Okay? If you get a yellow dominated person trying to talk to a green dominated person, it is war. Bruce R. McConkie is green. The September 6th was mostly yellow. Does that help? All right. I'll stop there in the interest of time. This is really powerful stuff, folks. Now let me add one more factoid. I told you we'd talk about, let me get my list right so I don't go off on my little tangent. I told you first we'd talk about threads and how you weave the threads of your tapestry. Your contribution to the Mormon tapestry has 8 colors. However, all of you have more threads of given colors than other people in the tapestry. When you put it in the tapestry, it'll be like the Bayeux tapestry. It'll be beautiful and big, particularly from a distance. But your balance is where your sense of betrayal comes from. Now, I told you I have analysis and dominance, didn't I? And I told you I have this transcendence thing. My mother passed away about 30 years ago. My father passed away about 35 years ago. Less than 30 days ago, they're buried together in Whittier, California. I have never liked California, but, you know, I led both their funerals. I was the chaplain. But I went to the funeral of my mother's youngest brother. And his daughter had interviewed him over the last 2 or 3 years before he died. And during the funeral, it was a Tongan funeral, so they're a little different. She showed a video clip of the deceased talking to the people there. It's a big deal in the Tongan culture. And I'm listening and enjoying it. And suddenly, he tells this story of his birth. Got a lot of miracles in it. It's got a lot of prayers. It's got a lot of tears. Verbatim what my mother had told me. Except she applied it to that's how she found me when they adopted me at the last minute. What? I come home from that funeral about 4 months ago. Near here, actually. And I have a big manila envelope. Shows up from California. Inside it were photos of me as a child. It was from somebody I didn't know. It was the daughter of my grandmother's sister, who had just passed away at age 90 and change. And my grandmother's sister, my mother's aunt, was my mother's best friend. And inside this was a lot of pictures and letters my mother wrote to her in the 1940s. They were very nice. They destroyed every element of every story I've ever been told about where I came from, why I was adopted, and who my parentage is. 3 days later, another envelope comes with more letters from Mom. Now she's married. My mother has never had a child. She's expecting a child, and they're talking about their children. So my name isn't Russell, it's Stevie. And then there's a date, September of 1945, and it says Russell is 3 months old today. That's betrayal. So how are my motivators going to be triggered instantaneously to protect myself? Analysis and dominance. Am I going to be nice to anybody? Now, I'm not saying, oh, woe is me. I'm saying I learned to do something. Look on the back of that card. I'll show you what it is. On the left-hand side, where it has the circle with the questions, there are four questions. That indicates the four different angles from which you can look at any problem, or the four different ways you can identify what strand to pick, what choice to make, to weave into your cable that will be part of the Mormon tapestry, of your family tapestry, and of your future. And you are in charge of that. Have you ever noticed that the middle letter of the word choices is I? You have free agency. You can choose. You can reweave. So I'll close with another true story. I've talked to you about threads. I've tried to talk to you about icebergs. I've tried to indicate to you that the way your head works in 80% of the cases is a contradiction of how you react, and that is normal. Didn't talk a lot about the head. That's that left circle on the back of the card with those four questions. The brain is wired from birth to ask those four questions. And as we are educated, we end up with a preference for one or two of them, and we leave out the others. And we cause confusion. That's another lecture. But when you take my brain dominance and my motivational structure, as with 80% of the population, they are not congruent because I was raised in two places. I was educated in the East, and my value system was formed in a little teeny valley that got snowed in every year. Nobody ever told me that they're supposed to go together. A lot of you have a similar kind of mobility. Nothing wrong with you. So let me tell you a true story. It's a short one. I do a tremendous amount of work with very high-level executives in the Fortune 10. And I'm always called on to tell the emperor he has no clothes. I was taken into this Englishman's office by the CEO. Knew the CEO, didn't know the Englishman. He says, "This is Russ Osmond. Do what he says or you're fired." And he walks out. That was awkward. We worked together a little bit, developed some trust. And we discovered he had no red vocabulary. His boss had a lot of red vocabulary. So we got these little dots like you see up here on the table, like you put on garage sales. This is in the 1980s. We gave him hundreds of red dots. And he put them on everything, and I gave him lists of red words, and he'd practice. And it succeeded, and I went on. About 15 years later, I'm on a plane. I see him, I walk up to him to to say hi. I don't follow up with my clients when we're done. I keep my promise. I do what I'm going to do and leave. I walk up to say hello to him, and the woman next to him says, "You're the dot guy." "Yes, ma'am." And she says, "Thank you. It saved our marriage." He wove a different set of triggers and reactions into his rope of life. The choice is yours. The best way to predict your future is to invent it. Thank you very much. And feel free to look at anything up here. And my email is on the card. Just write down what you want me to email to you, and I will. I'm sorry I can't give it to you, because unfortunately it all belongs to another client that paid for all that pretty printing. But I brought it. Okay? Thank you. Oh, yeah.